I want to ask a few questions on the Sedra, and they span a good portion of the Sedra, and we will give one answer to answer all of them. First question. You're all familiar with the Rashi, right away in the beginning of the Sedra. Whenever Rivka passed by a place of Avodah Zorah, Esav wanted to go out. Whenever she passed by a place of Torah, Yaakov wanted to go out. And therefore there was a constant turmoil in her womb. That's very nice, Rashi. It seems to contradict the entire foundation of the Torah. It seems that Yaakov and Esav were predestined to be one a tzaddik and one a rasha. And if there is predestination of what a person is going to be, then there is no free choice. And if there's no free choice, there can't be reward and punishment, and then there can't be a Torah. So this Rashi seems to contradict the entire foundation of the Torah. Secondly, parenthetically, they say that they understand why Esav, when she passed by a base of Avodah Zorah, wanted to go out. He couldn't serve Avodah Zorah in Rivka's womb. But Yaakov was learning with a malach the whole Torah. Why did he want to go out when they passed by a base medrash? So they say that you see from here that you could be learning with a malach in the best yeshiva there is, but if your chavrusa is Esav, better find another place. Okay. In addition, this seems to contradict something else also. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Antoninus had a machlokas. They used to learn together. And they argued over the following point. When exactly does the Yetzer Hara become effective within a person? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi held at conception. And Antoninus said at birth. Rebbe was a descendant of Yaakov, and Antoninus was a descendant of Esav. He was a Roman Caesar. Some say that he was the Anthony of Antony and Cleopatra. In any case, whoever he was a very fine person who did a lot of good things for Klal Yisrael, and he was very close with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And it's very possible that at the end of his life he converted to be a Jew. In any case, in the end, Rebbe agreed and admitted that Antoninus was right, because it says, "Lepesach chatas rovetz." The chatas, the Yetzer Hara, crouches at the opening, meaning when a person is born. So that means there is no Yetzer Hara before birth, according to this. So why in the world was Esav trying to get out to serve Avodah Zorah if he didn't have a Yetzer Hara? Yetzer Hara only starts at birth. Next question. Rashi says on the pasuk by Yigdalu Hanaorim that the first 13 years of their life, people did not notice the difference between them. They both went to school, they both came home from school, and then they became 13, bar mitzvah, and then the difference became noticeable. This one went out into the fields to hunt, and this one went to learn the Beis Medrash. Now, in the womb, they were such different children, one trying to serve Avodah Zorah and one trying to learn. And all of a sudden, they're born, and they become neutral, parv. And then 13 years later, to the day of their birthday, that's when they'll become different again. It's not normal. Next. So, Esav is this kid who likes Avodah Zorah, and Yaakov likes Torah. For some reason, when they were little kids, that wasn't obvious. And they became 13, it became obvious this one is a hunter and this one's a learner. And Yitzchak loves Esav. Doesn't he understand who his children are? He prefers the hunter over the person sitting and learning Torah. And even if you could say that Yitzchak did not recognize who Esav was, right? He was a hunter, he went out in the fields, maybe he thought he was sitting and learning there. But when Esav was 15, he came home very tired because he had committed three major sins. Gilui Arayish, V'chizdomim, and Avodah Zarah. Not bad for a 15-year-old. And it happened to be that Avraham Avinu died that day, that he shouldn't see Esav go out with Tarbus Ra. So it's obviously obvious that Esav was a Rasha. How come Yitzchak didn't notice it? You can't say, well, Yitzchak was blind, he was in the house, he didn't know. That's Yitzchak Avinu, the Av, the Rabbanu Shalom speaks to, who's a Navi. Can't be. And I'll show you that Yitzchak did recognize the difference between them. Because when Yaakov came in impersonating Esav, he tripped up twice that gave Yitzchak the feeling this is not Esav. The first thing, he mentioned Hashem's name. When Yitzchak said, how'd you come back so fast? He said, Ki hikra Hashem elokecha lefonai. And Yitzchak said, well, Esav never mentions Shem Hashem. And this kid's mentioning Shem Hashem, it doesn't sound like Esav. So here he knows he has a son who doesn't mention Shem Hashem, and he's the one he wants to give the brachas to. The second slip up was, he said, please, Yakum no avi. And Yitzchak said, I never heard Esav say please in his life. How could it be Esav? So here's a father, he knows one son, doesn't mention God's name, has no manners, and that's the one he wants to give the bracha to. Next question. Rivka obviously recognized who Esav was and who Yaakov was. So why did she put on this tremendous act, dress up Yaakov as Esav? Why didn't she just go in and tell her husband, I think that you're missing the boat over here. You should know you want to give a bracha to Esav. Esav's a Russian. And I think the Ramban says that she was very much intimidated by Yitzchak. Yitzchak was Gvura. He's a scary guy. But in the end of the parsha, Rivka sure has enough guts to tell Yitzchak that if you don't send Yaakov away, I can't live. You better send them away. He's not going to marry them. Tells him very clearly what to do. So those are the questions. Right? Basically, this whole parsha needs explanation. In order to explain it, I'm going to quote you two Rambams that you'll see on the surface seem to be totally contradictory. The first Rambam is in Perek Hay from Hilchos Tshuva, Halacha Aleph and Beis. Basically, the Rambam says the following: Rishus lechol adam nisuna Everyone is given free will. He has the freedom to decide if he wants to be a tzaddik. The imratza lahatos atzmo the derech ra, the lios rasha harishus biyadav. And if he wants to push himself to the bad side and be a rasha, he has freedom to do that too. Hu shekasu b'Torah. Human beings have the capability of distinguishing between good and bad and choosing between them. Now the Rambam says the following: don't even entertain the thought. Things that foolish goyim say. Verov golmei bnei Yisrael, and many unpolished Jews. Shakadosh Baruch Hu gozer al ha'adam mitchilas briyosol yosadik u'rasha. There are many goyim and even Jews who don't know better, who believe that the Rabbanu Shem decrees on a person from his very inception whether he's going to be a tzaddik or a rasha. Ein hadover kain, says the Rambam. It's not true. Ela kol adam roi lo lio sadika Moshe Rabbeinu o rasha ki yiravam. Every person has the free choice to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. He can't be a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu, but he can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, or a rasha like Yeravam ben Nevat. O chacham o sachol. He can be as smart or as foolish as he wants to be. O rachman o achzori. He can choose to be merciful or cruel. O kilai o shua. Or he can be a person who is, what's it called, stingy or generous. The chen shar kol adeos. And so too with all the other midos. A person has total free choice over what midos he's going to have. The ein lo mishi chafehu. No one forces him. The lo gozer alav. No one decrees on him. The lo mishi moshul le'echad mishnei ha. And nothing pushes him to either side except his own free will. Pretty categoric Rambam. Everyone has free will. Nothing pushes you one way or the other. You have choice to be a tzaddik or a rasha, and that includes all the midos. You can be cruel, merciful, you can be stingy, generous, and so on and so on. All the midos. Okay, pretty categoric Rambam. Now let me lead you another Rambam. Same person, same sefer. Just this is in Hilchos Deos. Deos har beyesh lekol echad ve'echad bnei adam zu mishuna mizu rechokim min rabbi. People have all different kinds of character traits. All different kinds of midos. From one extreme to the other. And then the Rambam describes yesh adam shu bal chema. One person's nature is to be angry, very agitated. Another person's very calm, cool, collected, doesn't get angry easily, for sure not, doesn't get angry at all almost. And then he goes and describes other midos. Some people are very courageous, some people very, squeamish, right, and cowards. And so on and so on. So now the Rambam says, and there are infinite degrees of midos between the two extremes. Second halach. The yesh bein kol mida v'deyar l'rechokim mena b'kaseh ha'achar deyos b'niyo z'urechokim izu. Now the Rambam says, where do they come from? Where do these midos come from? Where does a person get to be cruel or merciful or stingy or generous, which is the Rambam, what he's talking about over here. These kinds of midos. Now, based on the other Rambam, what would you think the Rambam's supposed to say? Where do you get it from? Your free choice. You choose it. The chol hadeos yesh ben deos shehein lo adam mitchilas briyoso. Lefi teva gufo. Some of them are part of you from your very inception. Which the Rambam said, anybody who says that, right, shouldn't even entertain the thought. They're not there by your inception, but you have a predilection to them, a proclivity to them. They're easier, that something pushes you towards that side, to be more merciful or more cruel or whatever. Your nature is pushes you one way or the other. And some of them really don't come from your inception. You learn from other people. Or you chose them on your own. And these two Rambams seem to be totally contradictory. Because the Rambam said that a person, and he says not just what's it called, for tzaddik or a rasha, but every midah, whether you're going to be cruel or merciful, depends on your free choice. And here the Rambam says that it's something that could be from your inception. You're born like that. Or that you have a predilection towards it. And the Rambam said over there that nothing pushes you to either side. There's another question here. The Gemara in Nida says the following. The Gemara says that when a person's conceived, a malach takes that first bastula, I think that's what it's called, beginning of the, what's it called, the embryo, and brings it before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That doesn't mean that it leaves the mother's womb and goes somewhere else. It means this malach presents, right, genetics to the Ribono Shel Olam. What's going to be with this kid? Is he going to be rich or poor? Strong or weak? What's it called? What other things are mentioned there? Handsome or ugly? But one thing isn't mentioned. Wise or foolish? Chacham o tipesh. But one thing isn't mentioned, tzaddik v'rasha. It's not decreed whether he's mere tzaddik or rasha. What is one of the things that is decreed? Is he going to be smart or foolish? The Rambam says, one of the things that you determine with your free will is how smart or foolish you're going to be. So the Rambam is clearly against this Gemara, seemingly. Because the Gemara includes smart and foolish in the things that are decreed. And the Rambam includes in the things that aren't decreed. What's the answer? The answer is very simple. These two Rambams are talking about two completely different things. Midos are character traits. And then there's how you use those character traits, your behavior. There is no mida that is good or bad. Meaning the following. Let's say the following case. Let's say you were born with a predisposition to be merciful. Now, that's part of your nature. You're a very squeamish, merciful person. And I was born with a predisposition to be cruel. Okay, I love the sight of blood. I love to pull the wings off of grasshoppers or whatever. And then you faint at the sight of blood. Okay. So we're different people. Okay. It's clear that different people are born with different midos. They don't acquire them, right, when they choose them, because you bring little babies home and they already have a character. They are not selfless, what's it called, completely part of the people until they get a character. They are characters. Some kids are really characters, even when they're little. Some kids you bring home from the hospital and you could do anything to them. Throw them around the room and they don't cry. Very calm, cool, collected. And some kids are finicky and cry about everything. Kids 2 years old, send them to nursery school or whatever. Some kids give everything away to their friends. They come home without their shoes, without their clothes, without their lunch. And some kids come home with everybody else's shoes and clothes and lunch. Different kinds of kids. Could have twins. They're totally different personalities. It's true that everybody, like the Rambam says, is born with a personality. Some of the things are part of the makeup of your neshama. It's part of your genetic code. Some of the things are things that are not necessarily part of your makeup, but you have a greater predisposition towards them. It's easier for you to get those midos, right? And some of them, later on in life, you learn from other people, or you choose on your own. That is for sure true. So what's the other Rambam? The other Rambam is talking about behavior. How you use those midos. Because none of those midos are good or bad. Being born with a predisposition to cruelty does not make you a Rasha. Why? Because every midah is parav, and depending on the situation, can be used for the good or the bad. I'll give you an example. Imagine the two of us are walking down the street. I have a predisposition to cruelty, and you have a predisposition to be merciful. And a terrorist who has just killed 200 innocent people in cold blood runs by, and he happens to trip right in front of us. And we're on our way to baseball practice. Each of us has a baseball bat in our hand. And the terrorist looks up and he says, "Could you help me up? I really am on my way to kill 200 more innocent people. Okay? Could you help me up?" You have a choice now, both of us. We can help him up and send him on his way. Or we can take the baseball bat, right, and he'd beat his brains into a pulp. Okay. So he never will hurt anybody else. Okay. Which do you think, under the circumstances, is the proper behavior? One or two? Two. Anybody think one? Okay, good. So I don't have to worry about turning my back on any of you. Okay, in any case. So, right, everybody agrees in that. Do you think that somebody who has a predisposition to cruelty is going to have an easier time beating that guy's brains in than somebody who has a predisposition to mercy? Of course. Right, I'm going to really relish beating this guy's brains in, and you're going to really have to overpower your squeamishness to do it. But the proper behavior is beat his brains in. Okay. We walk along, so we do that. We beat his brains in, we rid the world of a terrorist. Now we're walking down the street, and a little old lady trips and falls before us. What do you think the proper behavior is then? Beat her brains in or help her up? Everybody agree? Okay. Who's going to have an easier time helping this old lady up? You. Right? I'm going to have a harder time. We both can do what's right. Except I'm going to have to overpower my midah. You're going to be able to use it. In the first instance, the opposite. You're going to have to overpower your midah, and I'm going to be able to use mine. So cruelty can be used for the good. It depends on the situation. And mercy can be used for the bad. You can have mercy. Misplaced mercy is a terrible thing. So somebody who is born with a predisposition to be cruel is not a Rasha. And nor is a person born with a predisposition to be merciful a tzaddik. It's just a different character. In situations where it's proper to be merciful, then you'll use your midah. In places where it's proper not to be merciful, you suppress your midah, overpower it. And I, the opposite. I can be a tzaddik, I can be a rasha. You can be a tzaddik, and you can be a rasha. There's only one problem. It's not really fair. Because out of 100 times, 100 instances, how many times do you think the proper behavior is being cruel? And doing it, that's a proper behavior. Probably 1 out of 100. You usually don't have terrorists falling at your feet. Right? There's more old ladies in the world falling at your feet than terrorists. So I'm going to have a harder time doing what's right because I'm going to have to suppress my midah most of the time. Whereas you're going to have an easier time to do what's right because you're going to only have to suppress your midah a very few times, and you'll be able to use your midah most of the time. So it's not really fair. There's 3 answers to that. 1. That would be a good question if we all had 1 midah. So, and I had a midah that's easier to use for the good, and you had a midah that's easier to use for the bad, or vice versa. Then it's not fair. But we have a myriad of midahs. So in one area, I may have a midah that is easier to use for the bad, and I have to suppress it most of the time, but I also have another midah that's easier to use for the good. For instance, I have a predisposition to be cruel, but I also have a predisposition to be cool, calm, and collected. I don't lose my temper. You, on the other hand, have a predisposition to be squeamish and merciful, but you lose your temper easily. So I have a midah, one midah that's easier to use for the bad and harder to use for the good, but I have another midah that's the opposite. And the same thing with you. So it evens out. Okay, that's a good answer, except we all know people who have a predominance of either midahs that are easier to use for the good or easier to use for the bad. What about those people? They have a harder time in this life. Because true, they're not going to be a tzaddik or a rasha because of their midos, but they're going to have a harder time being a tzaddik or a rasha, depending on the kind of midos they have. 2nd answer. The Ribbono Shel Olam puts you into situations that fit your midos. That is another way of saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give you a test you can't handle. He tailor makes your life situations to fit your makeup. So the things that come your way are tailor-made to your personality. And thirdly, the Vilna Gaon says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes your midah into consideration. Let's say I have a predisposition to get angry quickly, and you have a predisposition to be calm and not to get angry. Somebody comes and steps on both our toes at the same time, and we both lose it. We go berserk. Okay? I once was in a pizza shop in Miami years and years ago, and by accident I stepped on the toes of the waitress, and she screamed, "You always do that!" I was never in that pizza shop in my life before. The whole place looked up like I'm a guy who goes around stepping on waitresses' toes all the time. This woman actually became berserk, right? So we both step on somebody's toes, and somebody steps on our toes, and we go berserk. Who do you think is going to be punished more for losing their temper? Me or you? I'm the one who has it's easier for me to lose my temper, and you have a harder time losing your temper. Who's going to be punished more for losing your temper? You. Because you should have controlled yourself. God understands I have a problem. It's harder for me. What happens if both of us control our temper? Who's going to get more reward? Me. It's harder for me. So in the end, based on these three things, it evens out. Okay. Based on this, okay, let's go back to the parasha and understand what's going on here and see that the questions are no questions at all. What I'm going to tell you now, I don't have any proof to, but a little bit of proof. There are midrashim that say that theoretically Yitzchak Avinu could have had 12 tribes. The 12 tribes could have come from Yitzchak. For whatever reason, he didn't have them. But it's within the realm of possibility that Yitzchak could have had two children who would have been two tribes, part of Klal Yisrael. And even though it says, Bi Yitzchak Yikari L'Chazera V'lo Kol Yitzchak, that doesn't mean that Esav or Yaakov were not included. It just meant that all of Yitzchak's children would not be the continuation of Klal Yisrael. Only part of them. That part could have been both Yaakov and Esav. In fact, there are opinions that say that Yitzchak had other children. The Torah doesn't speak about them because they were really not important, and they were bottled to Yaakov and Esav. In any case, whatever the case, it's possible. It's in the realm of possibility. We know what happened actually, but there could have been other scenarios. Okay. Klal Yisrael needs two kinds of leaders. It needs a king, who's more of a physical, material leader, and it needs a Kohen Gadol, who's more of a spiritual leader. Do you think that the midos of a king and the midos of a Kohen Gadol are different? Yeah. Their role is different. A king has to be a gibor. He has to be a person who easily can control himself and become cruel, because he has to set justice in the world. He has to go out and fight wars. He can't be a squeamish, merciful kind of person. He has to be a person who can use his midah of cruelty, right, in a very positive way. Kohen Gadol, on the other hand, is cool, calm, collected, spiritual person who's the opposite kind of midos. And therefore, it's very possible that had both Esav and Yaakov choose to use their midos properly, Esav would have been the melech, and Yaakov would have been the Kohen Gadol, and the spiritual side of Klal Yisrael would have come from Yaakov, and the physical side from Esav. That was possible. And there is a dugma of that. Not within Klal Yisrael. It says, Shnei goyim bevitneich, Rashi says, Elu Rebbi v'Antoninus. What do you mean? It's Esav and Yaakov. Rebbe and Antoninus were the symbol of what Yaakov and Esav could have been had they both used their character traits for the good. The Rebbe was the spiritual leader of the Jewish people, and Antoninus was the physical, material leader of the Romans. One thing, we have to go back a little bit. We asked another question on the Rambam, because the Rambam says that it's decreed whether you're going to be smart, or it's not decreed whether you're going to be smart or foolish, and the Gemara says it is. There's two different kinds of smart and foolish. There's IQ, which means your brain power, right? There are people definitely born with more of an intellectual bent, and people less intellectually they're not so smart. They don't have a high IQ. That does not affect their behavior anyway. You can be Aristotle and be a Rasha Gomer. And you can be a very simple, low IQ person and be a tzaddik. There's a difference between smart and stupid and wise and foolish. You can be stupid. I hate to use that word, but maybe something. You can be dull. Have a low IQ. Okay? If you're born with a 35 IQ, you are not going to be Albert Einstein. Okay? And if you're born with 135 IQ, you're not going to be a dull person. I mean, dull in intellect. But you can have 135 IQ and act foolishly. And you can have a 35 IQ and act wisely. But the Rambam says what's not decreed is your behavior, wise or foolish. What is decreed is your IQ. But it has nothing to do with your being a tzaddik or a rasha. You can be a very smart rasha and a very simple tzaddik. Okay. So based on this, okay, I have one proof to this, that the midos of Esav were the midos of a melech, from the fact that there was another person in history who had the same character makeup of Esav, David HaMelech. Admoni v'yefeinayim. Except he channeled, used, and suppressed his character to be a tzaddik. Whereas Esav let his character be used for bad behavior. But he could have suppressed it, channeled it, used it at the proper time, and been the same tzaddik as David HaMelech. Therefore, nowhere, to the best of my knowledge, if you can find a medrash that says differently, I have a problem with it. But I haven't found it. Nowhere does it say that Esav wanted to go out and serve idolatry. Nor does it say that Yaakov wanted to go out and learn Torah. Those are the behaviors of a rush or a tzaddik. Just says Esav wanted to go out. And Yaakov wanted to go out. Meaning the following. If you're going to be a melech, you're going to have a predisposition to the physical material world. That doesn't make you a rasha. You can conquer the physical material world for Avodas Hashem. Okay, in fact, Esav wanted to go out, and therefore, if you have a predisposition towards the material world, because you're going to have to be the melech who deals with the material world, you are drawn towards materialistic things. Doesn't make you a rush. You could be a tzaddik and be drawn to materialistic things and use them properly. But your nature is the physical. What is the most physical place in the world? Avodah Zarah. Because you take the spiritual and turn it into something physical. So Esau was drawn to that place like a magnet. It doesn't say he was going to serve Avodah Zarah. He didn't have Yetzer Sahara. But he was drawn to that place. Now, just because you're drawn to Avodah Zarah doesn't mean you're going to be in over Avodah Zarah. In fact, the Sifsei Kohen, who is the Talmidim of the Arizal, Sifsei Kohen ala Torah, asked the following question. It says, whenever Rivka passed by a base of Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to go out. What was Rivka doing there? You're not allowed to go there. Why was she passing by a base of Avodah Zarah? Says the Shach, because she grew up amongst Obei Avodah Zarah. She understood their psyche, and she went to be Makar of them. She understood them. So maybe Esav wanted to do the same thing. He didn't have any desire how to behave. He just was drawn to that place. He could have been drawn then to be makar of them, or drawn then to serve Avodah Zarah. It doesn't say that Yaakov wanted to go out and learn Torah. He was drawn to a place of spirituality, which is a base medrash. But he could have gone out and not learned the word. Just, you know, take it easy, sip a lemonade or whatever. He just likes places that are very spiritual. But he didn't want to be spiritual. Just didn't want to do anything. So you can spend your life in a base medrash and be a rasha. And you can spend your life around Avodah Zarah and be a tzaddik. All it says is that they were attracted to that kind of place, not that they were attracted there to do something bad or good. It's just they were different children. They had different midos. And both of them could have used them for the good, both for the bad, one for the good or one for the bad. That was their choice. And therefore, after birth, nobody paid attention to them. They still were different. But it meant nothing. It just meant that they were two different children. Doesn't mean that one's a tzaddik and one's a rasha. They're just different children. Everybody has their own personality. So nobody took notice of the fact that Esav was more drawn to be a physical child and Yaakov was more of a peaceful, spiritual child. Because it doesn't mean that one's going to be a rasha or a tzaddik or the other one. It's just different children. Until they were bar mitzvah. Once they were bar mitzvah, it wasn't a question anymore of midos. It was a question of behavior. Esav began to use his character trait in a negative way, and Yaakov started to use his character traits in a positive way. That's when people took notice. They didn't take notice of the difference intrinsically between them. There's nothing to take notice of. That's the way people are. But once they were able to make choices, they were bar mitzvah, they were already mature, then they started taking notice how each one is using their unique personality, good or bad. In fact, Rav Shamshon Frohlher says this medrash is a critique of Yitzchak and Rivka. If he didn't say it, I don't know if we could say it, but he says it. He says they both went to school and both came home from school. He said that is a criticism of Rivka and Yitzchak. How could you send Esav and Yaakov to the same school? A school that would fit Esav's personality would be terrible for Yaakov. And a school that fits Yaakov's personality would be terrible for Esav. They should have been sensitive enough to send them to different schools. Maybe Esav had to be sent to a field school. Hands-on, shechita, whatever, to use his midos in a positive way. So to a certain degree, he says, Yitzchak and Rivka are to blame for Esav developing his midos in a negative way rather than a positive way. Therefore, Yitzchak recognized who Esav was. He's a hunter, right? He's going to be the melech. And he wanted to give him the bracha. Which bracha did he give? Tal ha-shamayim, ishmanei ha-aretz, yavducha, amim. That's a bracha you give to a kohen gadol or a bracha you give to a melech? Yeah. A melech. What's a kohen gadol going to do, right, with having authority over people or whatever? Or mishmanei ha-aretz, rov dagon, the tirosh. He's a kohen gadol. Yaakov's a very nice guy. He's going to be the Kohen Gadol. He doesn't need this bracha. Esav needs it. And therefore, and the Maharal says this, the Ramban says it also in a certain way, Yitzchak saw Esav's, what we mentioned as negatives, as positive. Esav doesn't mention God's name. Of course not. Because his midah is to be out in the forest hunting, killing, so there are many times he's not allowed to mention God's name. It's improper. So he's very machmer. He has a lot of Yiras Shamayim. And he never mentions God's name for fear that he'll mention it in the wrong place. Yaakov, of course he mentioned God's name. Why shouldn't he mention God's name in a base medrash? But Esau, because of his midos and his function, so he doesn't mention God's name. Also, a king can't go around saying please and thank you. He has to be stern. Okay, he hasn't yet polished it off, who to say please and who not to say please. But this is his midah. His midah is to be strong, aggressive, not to be a wimp who says please and thank you all the time. So he hasn't yet mastered it, but that's what his mita is. So Yitzchak didn't see this as a negative, he saw it as a positive. There's only one problem with all of this, and that is Esav, and when he was 15, I told you, did three terrible averas. How did Yitzchak look at that? Didn't he know about it? And Avraham had to die that he shouldn't see Esav go out with Tarbus Ra. That means it was pretty obvious. So why didn't Yitzchak see it? So one of them is for sure clear that you have to say what I'm going to say. And therefore, since one of them is so clear, the other ones you can kvetch to. Meaning the following. It says that that day Esav committed murder. Who did he murder? Anybody? Nimrod. It's like somebody killing Hitler in his time. Would you consider that person a murderer or a hero? A hero. Nimrod was the arch enemy of God, the arch tyrant of the world. Couldn't you see Yitzchak Avinu saying, wow, my 15-year-old Melech is already killing Rishoyim? That's what Melachim were supposed to do. So then why did Chazal say he did a terrible Aveira? Because he didn't kill him because he wanted to rid the world of a Russia. He killed him because he wanted his clothing. And if you kill Hitler because you want his uniform, you're a Russia, you're a murderer. If you kill him to rid the world of a tyrant, you're a tzaddik. But Yitzchak didn't see, he gave Esav the benefit of the doubt. He probably had the right kavana. So he rid the world of a tyrant. That's clear that you could see that as a positive thing. So therefore I say the other two, same thing. It says that he committed, what's it called, Avodah Zarah. Well, it could be that Esav said the following. You know, I'm going to have to destroy this Avodah Zarah at some point, because I'm going to be the Melech. And I got to infiltrate them and become a double agent and make it look like I'm on their side so later on I can destroy it. That's during the 1950s here, there were a lot of children that were taken by the Catholics in their convents and brought up as Catholics who were from parents that were killed in the Holocaust. And the Gedolim permitted yeshiva bachrim and girls, Benos Torah, to disguise themselves as chilonim, even as goyim, to get into the convents and to find these Jewish children. So he can be an undercover agent too. So Esav could have fooled Yitzchak, or even fooled himself, to think he's doing this only to be an undercover double agent. How about the fact that he was over on Gili Arayis? So Chazal say he was Baal Nara Murasa, which means a woman who was engaged to get married. Like today, an engagement. She wasn't yet married. She wasn't a married woman. But she was destined to marry some Ovid Avodah Zarah. Okay, they already had the first stage of marriage. But she wasn't considered married. By a goy, that doesn't make her a married woman. Only by a Jew. So she wasn't really married. She was engaged. Okay. Esav said, you know what? This poor woman is going to marry this Ovid Avodah Zarah, and she's going to end up being an Ovedus Avodah Zarah too. Wouldn't it be better if I seduced her and makarif her? Just makarif her a little bit too closely. Right? And then I'll save her from that fate, and she'll be my wife. And Esav could have a lot of wives. Or a lot of pilakshim. And that way, what's it called? I'm saving her from a fate worse than death. Now she's has connection to the grandson of Avraham, the son of Yitzchak, and not some Ovid Avodah Zarah. Don't you think there are people in this world, or were people and are people, who in the name of Kiruv go over red lines and are makariv in a way that is not proper? Men to women and women to men? Which leads sometimes to break up of families or whatever, in the name of Kiruv? So it's possible. So Yitzchak gave Esav the benefit of the doubt. Don lekatzchus. That this was all part of his role as a melech. So how come Avraham had to die? Because Avraham, Esav was a fake. And Yitzchak was only brought up amongst people who were honest. He never saw fake people. Yishmael was thrown out of the house. He never saw them. Terach, he left when he was before he was born. So Yitzchak assumed that everybody is honest, and Esav is using his midos in a positive way. Rivka knew fakers; she could smell one. Her brother was one. Her father was one. She grew up amongst them. She could tell one a mile away. She knew that Esav was a faker. There was nothing to be done. The katzchus. When you're sure, there's done the katzchus only when there's a doubt. There was no doubt. Avram also was brought up amongst negative people. He could smell a rat a mile away. Yitzchak couldn't. He had to give him, halacha was, he had to give him the benefit of the doubt. At least it was a suffix to him. And therefore, that leaves us only to explain why Rivka didn't tell Yitzchak. She was afraid, says Rav Shamsha Fuel Hirsch, that Yitzchak, and there is Shonim who say similar things, but he says it more clearly. Rivka was afraid that she would convince Yitzchak not to give Esav the bracha. But she was afraid she couldn't convince him to give it to Yaakov. Because he would say, you know, this is a bracha for a melech. Esav is cut out for that. Yaakov's not. So what am I going to give him the bracha for? He's not cut out for it. So Rivka had to prove to Yitzchak that Yaakov is going to be the only progenitor of the Jewish people. That means that he's going to have within him both midos, the melech and the kohen. And when necessary, he can muster up the midos of the melech too. How did he prove that? By impersonating Esav. That when it's necessary, Yaakov can act like Esav and fool you. And then you know that he has it in him. Now he deserves that bracha too. So that was the reason Rivka didn't tell him, because she was afraid she could convince him not to bless Esav, but she couldn't convince him to give Yaakov the bracha. She had to prove to him that Yaakov had it in him to use the midos of the melech when necessary, even though his ikar midos were ish tam yoshev o'alim. So that is the parsha. The parsha is not two young boys who were predestined, one to be a tzaddik, one to be a rasha. Either of them could have been tzaddikim, either of them could have been rishoyim. They both could have been tzaddikim, they both could have been rishoyim. They just were different people. And each one could have chosen to use their character for the good or for the bad. Yaakov chose to use it for the good and became Yaakov Avinu, and Esav chose to use it for the bad and became Esav HaRasha. That is, in my estimation, the parsha. It's a conglomeration of a lot of different mefarshim and some sugar and or salt and pepper of my own, but that I think is a nice overview of what this Seder is all about.